You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 12 August, we've got U.S. inflation data due 2:30, expected 2.8% versus 2.7 previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mateta Tolari from RMB. I'm interested in how he's thinking about gold. Is there still a bull case? Look, the miners are making huge amounts of money, but can the yellow metal break higher? Maybe that inflation print later today will give us some insight. Isaac Odendahl from Old Mutual Wealth. The Trump tariffs, are they having less impact than perhaps expected? Is that perhaps a bad thing? Is it might embolden Trump. And then Carl Follow from Rand Swiss. Benefits of a Swiss bank account. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, the legit deal, Comcom, green lights Pepkor's $1.9 billion fashion brands acquisition, but with some conditions. Business Day, process wins conditional EU green light for Just Eat deal. Naspers promises to shed most of its stake in Delivery Hero, gets approval over the line. Morning markets. The U.S. was red last night. S&P down 0.25%. Nasdaq off 0.4%. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney up 0.33%. Tokyo up 2.5%. Hong Kong, it's less than a point lower, so we call that flat. 10 cents off 0.25%. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures, your exception, $3,403 an ounce. Brent, $66.86. Platinum, $1,348. Palladium, $1,159. The Rand, $17.73. Bitcoin, $119,000. Top 40 opening call, 240 points to the green, little over 0.25% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mateta Tolari, head FX execution at RMB. Mateta, interested in your thinking around gold. It's been trading around that, 3,300, 3,004, maybe 450 at points, kind of going sideways now for a number of months. Is there still a bull case? And I made the point in the intro, the miners are still making huge profits. But is there a bull case that can see gold break higher, or has it kind of met its peak perhaps?
Good morning, Simon. As you just were just starting the show, I mean, a headline just came out now that Mr. Trump is extending the China tariff truce for 90 days. So, I mean, this feeds into some of the sentiment that the market is obviously working on in terms of this bullish outlook for gold. And obviously, I mean, it's really driven by various factors such as the geopolitical tensions, the economic uncertainty, central bank policies. I mean, obviously, yes, we are, you know, losing momentum around that 3-5 level. Mm-hmm. I think if anything, the long-term outlook remains positive for gold due to the economic uncertainties, the geopolitical tensions. But also, I mean, market sentiment is really cautiously bullish. I mean, you know, the markets are really seeking safe haven assets. But, you know, you've seen also a bit of a shift, out of gold into the likes of silver and, palladium, etc. So, you know, it's also even platinum also rallying. I mean, already you're seeing central banks like China really stockpiling gold, which is really expected to support prices. I mean, the key drivers this year that we have been looking for gold prices is obviously the lower interest rates. That reduces the opportunity cost for holding gold. There's been also a bit of a weaker dollar making gold a bit cheap as well. Geopolitical tension, it's still there, whether we like it or not. The Middle East tension is still bubbling under. Eastern Europe, you know, Russia, Ukraine, it's still there. Inflation, I mean, we know that gold's hedge against inflation supports its value, especially when you talk about inflation numbers coming out this afternoon. So, you know, overall, it feels like the gold market outlook is positive. the local gold miners, they're really doing well. I mean, the likes of Goldfields, they're smiling all the way to the bank, Harmony Gold, etc. But I mean, yes, the outlook is positive. It's really driven by, you know, all these factors that I did highlight. But also, it's going to be quite interesting to see, you know, if we do see that break around that 3-5 level, if we do see a sustained break above there, then definitely, I mean, then we start talking about 4,000, but it's still a far way out at this point in time. I mean, we are losing momentum as soon as we get to that 3-5 level, and it just feels like if we get a bit of a push, then definitely from a technical level, it feels like 4,000 will be in sight.
I take your point. Gold is almost in a sense, it's kind of, I suppose it's pausing, it's waiting for sort of something, but it does seem to be saying that it expects the next news story to send it higher, more likely than lower.
Exactly, very much so. I mean, and that's the problem that we have seen, obviously, the likes of, you know, the tariffs coming into effect, you know, the Fed already, that's out of the way. It doesn't mean that, you know, for the next 4 months, you know, before we close off the year, that there's no risks. I mean, we do know that, you know, there's still, obviously, like we said, we all thought the 1st of August is tariff deadline day. Already seeing Mr. Trump, you know, talking about truces and obviously extending some deadlines. But also, you know, there's policies that the US is talking about. There's new policies that are coming into effect. And I think the market is really anticipating to see what's the next big thing that's going to push us. So, you know, at this point in time, yes, we are struggling to rally above the 3-5 level. But when you think about the local gold miners, I mean, the mere fact that from their cost of production perspective, they're still smiling all the way to the bank. I think they're really happy with where things are. It kind of does remind you, you know, of a few years back. I mean, when we saw, you know, the Eastern European, you know, conflict going on there, it did see the likes of Tungela smiling all the way to the bank because of this geopolitical tension. But at this point in time, with it still remaining at these levels, I mean, it is something that the local gold miners, despite what has happened over the past few years, they're still really happy about what's going on.
Yeah, and those miners, I mean, I remember looking at the numbers, when was it, sort of for year end. I mean, their price of sold gold was around $2,200 per ounce, a couple of different points there, but broadly around $2,200 per ounce. They're now getting $3,200 per ounce. That extra $1,000 just going straight to the bottom line, and we've seen it with the Anglo Gold Ashanti, we've seen it with Goldfields. They are making massive bang for buck. Mateta Tulari, head FX execution, RMB, appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Carl Furler. He's a wealth advisor at Rand Swiss. Carl, appreciate the time. You were doing a webcast last week around Swiss banking. My first big question, I suppose, is what's the attraction with Swiss banking? Because it's no longer, I mean, it used to be for, I don't know, sort of the underworld and the despots of the world, but it has changed a bit. What is the attraction to a Swiss bank account?
No, hi there, Simon. I think the attraction has always been there with Swiss banking. I mean, if you think even back to sort of, you know, World War days, you know, investors would always flock their sort of gold and their assets, you know, in Switzerland because it was almost seen as a safe haven for a jurisdiction. I think that sort of thinking has still remained the case. And I think especially for South African investors, it really presents an attractive way to, you know, externalize and hold custody for their offshore assets. I was listening to your podcast with Frabella on country bias.
Yeah.
It was fantastic, where we do almost unpack where, you know, South African investors are often overexposed to South African assets. When we sit down with clients, we often look through their sort of portfolio. And what we find is, you know, they often overexposed without even knowing their property, their primary residence is based here in South Africa. Their income is based here in South Africa. So all of a sudden, you know, trying to find a house for offshore capital, Swiss banking has, you know, presented quite a useful way to hold custody for their offshore assets.
That's a great point. And it is, I suppose, you know, once you've got assets over, and it would be the externalizing of your money, your million a year or the 10 million extra if you get a letter from SARS. And one of the features, and you were talking particularly about Swissport, and I know them from the listed perspective rather than the sort of user perspective, it's also small things like multi-currency accounts, which might not sound like a lot, but actually could be. And this isn't so we can all be FX traders. It's just so we can have the right currency in place.
100%. So I think that's one of always the sort of big features and benefits we've enjoyed with the sort of the Swiss quotes banking is the fact that investors, when opening their accounts, are given one IBAN number. So it's an international, you know, bank account number. Mm-hmm. And within that one IBAN number, it links to, you know, over 22 different currencies. And where that's exceptionally useful is, I mean, we've seen it with our client base. They can be traveling through the UK, pay with their mm-hmm. pounds in their Swiss quote accounts. And then they can travel through Europe and pay for their euros. And while doing all that, they can actually hold, you know, US-based ETFs. So having that sort of multi-currency accounts is exceptionally valuable to gain exposure to a much wider, you know, asset class pool.
The other point, and a lot of folks are thinking to themselves, what is the Swiss stock exchange? Again, this is global. You mentioned their US ETFs. This is very much around global options. This is not restricting you to investing into Switzerland. To be clear, in a market I know nothing about.
Yes, no, 100%. So that's the big sort of, you know, aspect we've enjoyed with them is their sort of wide investment universe with over 3 million instruments you know, made available to investors. Now, as exciting as that always is, one thing, you know, having a sort of unconstrained, you know, sort of asset class to work with, the one sort of concern we've seen amongst many investors is almost the analysis paralysis. Because there are almost so many options, investors feel a bit, you know, worried on where they gain exposure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think the benefit with it is that we often like to sit down with them and then based on the sort of risk profile assessment, see do they want, you know, more exposure towards bonds or ETFs, shares, structured products. I mean, there really is array of different investment options available there.
It is. And when you said 3 million analysis paralysis came to my head three times in a hurry. But you make the point. I mean, this is almost like logging onto your, you log onto your local equity account. Okay, it's a much, much smaller environment. We get that entirely. But it's not that you now go and invest like a crazy. You still got that process in place. You've just got the scope of it. There's also sneaky features. And they're not sneaky. They're just some clever ones. I mean, Swissport, again, a credit solution, which, you know, bridge loans and for liquidity and stuff. It is that full service suite, which is so important.
Definitely. And I think that's where they almost try to differentiate themselves from not being just a sort of banking account and also not just being a brokerage account. Mm. They try and mix those two together. And I mean, yeah, the Lombard loan facility is incredibly valuable. And I think clients do get comfort in the sense that, you know, they can hold various positions, and whether that be bonds, or whether that be ETFs or stocks. Mm-hmm. And should they need, you know, cash, they can actually loan against their positions. So it does almost allow for some sort of liquidity without having to realize a sale of, you know, a sort of investment.
And the last point is that they are happy with South African account holders. I know there's been a couple over the years that have, particularly around Europe, which have sort of stopped transacting with South Africans, probably more so since we got grey listed. But they're quite comfortable with, I don't want to say the risk, but with us as South Africans. They will take us and open the accounts and we do the sort of normal FICA as always.
No, 100%. So yeah, I mean, that's obviously with the grey listing, it does pose slightly more challenges. So the Swiss, they're actually a bit more sort of traditional in their paper-based forms. So unlike sort of most brokers where you can open accounts online now. But yeah, what we like to do is, I mean, you can sit down with the clients, we then open the account. Unfortunately, it does then entail getting the forms couriered through to Switzerland. But I mean, it does at least still open the sort of, you know, offshore custody for South African investors. So they're more than happy, you know, holding South African investors' funds.
Yeah. And I've had to, when I opened one of my first offshore accounts, I had to literally courier documents, which was weird. But look, it worked. Hey, it's old fashioned, but it works. We'll leave it there.
Definitely.
It's Carl Furlong here, wealth advisor, Rand Swiss. Carl, appreciate the time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Isaac Odendahl, our Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Isaac, appreciate the early morning, as always. Trump tariffs, and you're looking at pre-August, mostly 10%. Subsequent to the beginning of the month, of course, we've had all sorts of deals coming. The China one kicked out, perhaps. But in recent note you had, you talk around perhaps they're having less impact on a negative impact on global economies. PMI and other data suggests maybe they're not as bad as we all thought they might be.
Yeah, so far the global economy has been resilient in the face of this tariff shock, and that's obviously good news, and there are a couple of reasons for that. But I think basically it's still too early to tell. And I think there's also, partly because, as you say, most of the tariffs only kick in now from August onwards, and partly because early in the year, obviously, a lot of companies saw the tariffs coming and they started stockpiling and trying to get the orders in as quickly as possible before the tariffs start applying. Consumers obviously thought, you know, if I'm going to buy television, I better buy it now instead of waiting, you know, down late in the year when it's going to be more expensive. So there was a fair degree of front loading. And obviously, as we work through that inventory, there's, you know, there isn't a big impact on either price or margin. But as you get towards the end of the year, I think you're going to start seeing the impact both in terms of prices going up for consumers in the US. Of course, outside the world, there isn't really a price impact. And then the negative economic impact in terms of, you know, companies in the US having to absorb some of these tariffs in their margins, which means lower profitability and potentially, you know, less employment and so on. And then maybe for exporters also, you know, either lower prices or they just lose the export contracts.
And we saw, I mean, back in April, we had kind of similar-ish levels to what we're getting now in terms of tariffs. The market hated it. Trump blinked, rolled it all back, gave us that 90-day. And now we're kind of back to more or less where we were there. And I take your point. I mean, you know, people buying forward, companies stockpiling. But does this perhaps embolden President Trump when he looks at it and says, well, you know, tariff round two, in a sense, the market is able to absorb it?
Yeah, I think that's the fear. And I think that kind of disciplining mechanism of the market worked quite well in April. It obviously wasn't fun for anybody who's an investor, but it did the job. And so far there hasn't been that same response from either the market or the economic data. And obviously the economic data is very slow moving.
Sure.
The market response is immediate. We did see the hint of that last month when the US released the employment numbers, and those were much worse than expected. And Trump subsequently fired the head of the statistics agency. So that is not, you know, that's also not quite the desired impact. I think the reality is that during the course of the next couple of months, Americans are going to start seeing prices of some key items start going up.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to complain about it. And I think that will hopefully soften Trump's stance when he starts negotiating or continues negotiating with countries like South Africa specifically.
And one of the data points you brought out is the Danish shipping giant, Maersk. I mean, and they are an absolute giant. They say that actually they're seeing some strong trade in the rest of the world offsetting weakness in the US. Are we seeing more evidence that perhaps the world is sort of, I suppose, rooting out of America? And, you know, in the ideal, we sell our citrus fruit to somebody else if America won't take it. But that's going to be a bit of a slow process, notwithstanding what the shippers are saying, perhaps.
Yeah, that is the problem. It is a slow process, and of course, you know that it's manageable. But now everyone is trying to do it at once.
So,
that sense, it's probably good news for you if you're in the logistics business like Maersk. But for the actual exporters, you know, finding markets, you know, maybe you have to give significant discounts on your product to find those new markets. So, I mean, this is I think. Basically, you know, as we learned in sort of first year economics, this is a deadweight loss. You know, everybody loses here.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. But, you know, I think ultimately businesses are adaptable. You know, no one's going to sit still and wait for something to happen. You know, companies are going to look for different markets. They're going to look for ways of diversifying. I mean, China, for instance, although exports to the US are way, way down because of the tariffs, overall exports are actually up. So Chinese have managed to find different markets for their products. Now, some of it might just be trying to reroute goods through other countries into the US, but the point is no one is going to sit still and just kind of mourn the loss of their US customers. They're going to have to look for alternatives. And I think that's a key thing to look out for over the months ahead is, do other countries at a government level embrace free trade, try and deepen trade relationships, and strike new trade deals? Or do we all start putting up protective barriers because we're copying what the Americans are doing? And I think luckily no sign of that yet, but obviously that would then put us into a very different environment if a country started doing that. And that would be quite worrying. But so far it seems the opposite. So far it seems countries are kind of moving in the direction of saying, well, okay, you know, the Americans will come around one day, but for now we need to keep on doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I hadn't actually thought of that risk where we actually get more trade barriers. To your point, so far, I was going to say so good. Let's rather say so far that is not happening, because that, of course, will complicate things. That's Isaac Odendaal, Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Our poll for today is with Carl Furlow. We're talking there for long. Do you have a Swiss bank account? Maybe it's a secret and you're not telling anyone. Maybe you do. Maybe you just got a normal offshore bank account. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. And our poll yesterday, we had been chatting with Floberella Yates from Equilibrium, talking about country bias. And we asked if your portfolio suffered from country bias. We got a fairly equal split between the options. No, all offshore. Yes, but some regulations. And you think it is a good balance. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Family offices.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.